This is about the iPhone 5, which has been around for a couple of weeks now. It's the latest version of Apple's iPhone. I'm not going to do an unboxing because it's already been unboxed, but I'll tell you about my unboxing experience. The nice UPS guy came about 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday the 21st, and he shoved the box in my hand. And as with Apple's minimalism, the box itself was pretty small. It wasn't a whole lot bigger than the phone itself. So I opened up the box and unwrap it, take it out, and my first impression was, oh, rats, they sent me the wrong phone. This is 4S. Then I started feeling a little bit more. I'm like, oh, no, hold on a second. Got a couple little different things here. The differences on the outside are minimal. Like I said, in my hand, it felt like an older generation phone. So going around the top of the phone, you got the usual power/lock button. And that's all there really is on the top. There's nothing there. The headphone jack has moved its way to the bottom of the phone. Going down the side of the phone, you got the usual mute, up-down volumes. And on the right-hand side of the phone, you got the tray for the SIM card, which is there on all versions of the iPhone, even if it's a CDMA phone. Bottom is where all the big differences are. On the left-hand side, there's the 3.5mm jack, which we were just wrestling with right now. And then the speaker is all the way on the right-hand side. Now, the speaker is definitely a lot bigger. You can actually feel with your finger that they actually enlarged the speaker opening. This is now a 9-pin connector. It's very small. If it's maybe the same dimensions as maybe a micro USB cable. In fact, it kind of almost feels like that a little bit, but it feels a little more sturdy in your hand than a micro USB. And the cool part about this cable is that it's not directional. You could plug the cable in either direction. And until you actually start using it, you don't realize how much better that is. How much time I've like spent fiddling with the cable, you know, putting one way. I only have two options, up or down. Always seem to pick the wrong direction, and I have to. This cable is like really cool. It makes it a lot easier. And like I said, the headphone jack is now on the bottom, and the phone itself is a lot thinner. In fact, if they make it any thinner, they're gonna have to go away from the 3.5mm headphone jack because that pretty much takes up the entire width of the unit itself. So we'll talk a little bit about that connector. There's no longer any analog signals going through this connector. It's entirely digital. So I think where they're going with this is connections to digital video and audio straight through. I don't think we will see all the uses for this cable yet, but we will. It's called Lightning, and it's supposedly a lot faster than the older cables because of that. The width of the unit is the same. It's a little bit, like I said, it's a little bit flatter, and it's a little bit taller. Putting it up against an older iPhone, it's maybe one-third of an inch taller. It is a little bit taller than that, and there's an advantage to that. What they went with the 4-inch diagonal screen as opposed to 3.5, and there is an advantage for blind people with that. It's not just a visual thing. You actually get an extra row of icons on each page of the home screen. And again, until you start using it, you don't realize how much easier it is to work with that. Yeah. Booting up, starting up the phone, very fast. You know, obviously, it's got the latest processors. It's still a dual-core processor. Apple doesn't officially publish speed tests or processor speeds, but reading some of the articles online, evidently it's got a variable speed chip, which could go between 500 megahertz and 1.3 gigahertz. And reportedly, from some of the teardowns online, it's got about a gigabyte of RAM. None of that anyone should be concerned about. Either your phone works or it doesn't work. But the boot time is very fast. I powered it up, gave it about a second or two, hit the home button 3 times, I had voiceover. So there's a definite advantage there. Okay, the phone is much lighter because of, and it's probably because of the redesigned components that make it a lot thinner. In fact, it kind of felt, when I first felt it, it kind of felt a little too light, like, is this thing fragile? You equate something being light with something not being as well built. And this goes to a question I was asking the ride that David asked. And David, you want to ask me a question again?
Yeah, do you suggest having a protective cover for it or not?
I do, and I'll tell you what my rationale is. Yeah. I haven't done any drop testing or scratch testing. CNET has one of the commentators, Molly Wood. She actually does torture testing on devices, and she has a great podcast, and that must be such a great job to have. So they actually did drop tests and scratch tests on it stuff, and as it turns out, the iPhone 5 scored better on a drop test than any phone that they've tested, including like Samsung Galaxies, all that stuff. It will survive a drop better and still be functional. And what it hasn't survived, and this is where I suggest the case still, is that there's reports out there, and there's enough to make substantial reports that it can be scratched. The back of the unit, instead of the old glass, now has a aluminum metal finish, and there's a lot of reports of people putting it in their pockets with their keys, and the keys nicking the back of the unit. Also, around the bevel of the glass, there's a lot of reports of people chipping that. So, none of these things affect the operation, but if you're concerned about, you know, either cosmetics or possibly resale value, I do think it's worthwhile to spend a couple bucks to get a case. I mean, I bought this one for about $3 on eBay. Yeah.
What kind of case is it?
This is a very cheapy, I'll pass it around. I mean, there's nothing impressive about this.
Do you have any other recommendations for cases for
it? Well, when I got the first batch of phones, I actually got the first day that came out. There was not many cases available. In fact, one of the ones that was out was the Defender, the out-of-box. And I actually don't like that case. I think it's too bulky. So there was, and this was like, I did a search on eBay and it came up with about two things, and this is one of them. So, yeah. In time, I may, if I find something I like better, you know, get that. So this is a replacement for my iPhone 4, which was starting to show its age. Battery life was starting to go south on me. I've dropped my iPhone 4 on a concrete driveway getting out of cars numerous times. I've never broken it. I know people with cracked screens and cracked back glasses.
Did you crack one? It fell out of the, I was trying to open a door and my phone fell out of the case that it was in, and it did shatter the back glass, which I replaced for $29. Apple could replace it in 5 minutes because it was the back glass.
Yeah.
But still, I would do a case.
The big thing that is the new software. They have iOS 6, and it's obviously needed for the new phone, but it's also available for older units. It goes, and they also go to the older iPods, I believe, the fourth generation, maybe the third generation as well. And there's some new stuff in iOS 6. It's basically the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll talk about the bad first. Bad is that because of contractual obligations, they can no longer include the YouTube app as part of the package. So you could go to the App Store and download a YouTube app. And I don't know if anyone's tried it, but I've tried it, and I don't think it's as friendly to use.
It stinks.
Okay, that's very good. It stinks, yeah. I think the layout of the app is much more cumbersome than the old YouTube app, which was straightforward. I mean, I could look up videos, I could search for stuff, but it's not as user-friendly as the old one was. Yeah. So if you're big into YouTube, that's one downside. However, and maybe the positive effect of them not including a YouTube app out of the box is that there will be more YouTube apps available. Yeah. We'll talk about the ugly. The ugly is that Apple now uses a new Maps app. Maps have always been part of iOS, but now it's been revamped totally. It used to use Google Maps as its source data. It's now using, they claim that it's their own concoction, but it's really based a lot on TomTom data from TomTom GPS. So, and it has what's called a flyover mode, which this is very visual, but it actually does give you pictures of what it is that you're navigating to and around. And I've been told that some of these visuals are really bad. Like, they have pictures of bridges just melting into space, and the Statue of Liberty is like a washed out ghost or stuff like that. So that's the ugly. But other than that, the Maps app actually works very nicely. It's a voiceover aware app. So it knows when you're using VoiceOver and changes its settings automatically. It does give turn-by-turn directions, so you can put in an address and it'll take you right to that direction address right now. It's got options of pedestrian mode, vehicle mode, and there's been a lot of criticism of this because the map data is new. They're finding lots of issues with the map data. I heard of one person who tried to look for something in Columbia, South Carolina, and got results someplace in South America. I've been using this now for 3 weeks, and I was skeptical. It was great. I mean, I tried destinations. I had never had a problem until yesterday afternoon. I was in the car, and we were coming from Malden back to my home in West Roxbury. And we were on a highway. And even though it was given the correct directions, it was saying, get off this exit, turn right here, turn left, go there. It was given the right street names. The one thing it did was that it misidentified Route 93 as Route 95. So that's definitely a mapping issue. Even though it knew which exits to get off and where to turn and everything like that, it just was reading that road incorrectly. So there's definitely some issues. Apple CEO Tim Cook kind of put out a little public relations letter saying that they know about the issues. You know, sorry, we're working on it, and yeah, you know, it's going to improve. Yeah.
I'm just walking around my neighborhood with it. I couldn't get it to consistently talk when I turned the corner and stuff like that. Is that an issue you've had, or...
I have not had that problem. Now, when you were doing that, were you in pedestrian mode or a vehicle mode?
I was just walking around, and I tried to set, you know, a place I was going to. And then I started walking, and it just...
You have to put it in pedestrian mode.
The issue with that is that if you don't put it in pedestrian mode, it assumes that you're traveling in a vehicle, and you don't want very minute details like that. Yeah, because I did the same experiment you did, like just walk around the neighborhood, and I had better results than that. I mean, I could. Yeah. Then again, it could also be your mapping data, yeah.
Do you have to use that with an app or just by itself?
Good question. No, this is totally standalone. I mean, I know in days past, to get really, you know, live turn-by-turn directions, you always had to buy another app. Like, I used to use something called Navigon, which was fine, but it was very expensive. I think originally I paid like $50 or something for it, like that.
And you think it works as well as Navigon, or?
But to answer the first question, no, this is totally standalone. And it also works with Siri as well. You could, you know, hit the button, tell Siri, take me to 77 Mass Ave in Cambridge, and it'll just launch maps, and it'll take you there. As far as comparing it to Navigon, there's a few differences. The maps in Navigon are on the device. So if you're out of coverage, it's still going to work. I mean, as long as you have GPS coverage, it still works. It won't work as well because you don't have augmented GPS, but it still works. Apple Maps is always alive, updating. I mean, that's why they could fix it so fast, because the maps are off-site. They're not on your phone. Other things, too, is that Navigon being a standalone product, they have a lot of extra services. Like, they have traffic updates. You could get, I think there's even something now for like speed traps. They'll tell you where speed traps are. Something. There's a lot of add-ons for Navigon that you could get. Mm-hmm.
What about points of interest? Are they on the maps?
Yes, actually, they do have points of interest, yeah. And I think it pulls data from places like Yelp and stuff like that. I'm not entirely sure where, you know, all of the, but they actually all does have points of interest. Like you could say to Siri, find me McDonald's in Cambridge. And he'll know what that, you know, he'll be able to do stuff like that.
I think, though, from what I've heard, and at least in my area, because I've played with it a bit too, is that it identifies some points of interest more than others. So, like, it's big on restaurants, but it's not so big on some other things that you would think it would know. I mean, from my experience, and some of the streets around my neighborhood, it did not identify. Now, I'm in a suburb. I think it still needs work. I think it has some promise, but I think it still needs work.
And, Frank, with the maps, if you're, like, downtown Boston, mm-hmm. can you run your finger on a map and it identifies streets like an Ariadne Jeep?
Yes, you actually can do that. And I really did not find that to be kind of useful because, you know, you could run your finger over a map and it'll say, like, LaGrange Street, Baker Street, but what does that really tell you? Yeah, yeah, you don't really know how to get there. Yeah, it just tells you it's nearby. Yeah, yeah.
Really? Okay, yeah. So it doesn't spatially do it so that...
It actually does it spatially, but...
It's not that accurate.
Where's really your point of reference? Yeah, that type of thing, yeah.
Is it sort of like Ariadne kind of in that way?
No, it's not... It's not as verbose as Ari Natalie. It doesn't really kind of like... I know Ari Natalie is constantly speaking when I use it. Yeah, this kind of just gives you more like turn next turn at, you know, Baker Street type of thing.
No,
yeah.
I mean when you go over the street, over the screen. And
oh, yeah. It tells you, reads the names of the streets,
like,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
Like Ari.
Yeah, it does sort of like Ari when you. I mean, if you, like you're talking about as far as just moving your finger across up, down, left, and right... You know, to get an idea where the streets are.
Exploring your neighborhood.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, that it does do that. Yeah. Okay. In fact, it's interesting is that it actually not only reads the names of the streets, but it'll actually make a different tone when you're walking on a street as opposed to like going off the street map. It's a skill I really haven't mastered because maybe I just don't spatially draw the picture in my mind of what it's telling me. But yeah, but it does do that. There's something called callback. This is pretty cool. It hasn't got a lot of attention, but it's kind of useful. If your phone is ringing, on the lock screen where it says slide to unlock, yada, 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 at the top there's another button that you could tap. It says, I think it does say callback or something relatively similar. And it'll let you tap that and it'll send it to voicemail and it lets you set a reminder in your reminders app. For say you could pick a time frame, like a half hour. Then, you know, when a half hour is up, it'll remind you to call that person, and it'll give you certain options. You could just make a regular voice call, you could send a text message. And with the text messaging thing, too, is that you could actually select from presets, like, say, I'm on my way, or, yeah, I'll be there, I'll call you back in 10 minutes, or something like that. So a lot of times you don't even have to type the text message. You know, it gives you a bunch of options like that.
It's called call options.
Yeah, call, is that what it's called? Okay.
Yeah, call options.
There's also something called do not disturb. Now, do not disturb is, say, you want to... not have your phone ring at certain times. Like, and you could do it either in one of two different ways. You could either do it manually or on a schedule. So you could either turn this feature on and have it on until you turn it off, or have it come on different schedules. Like, for instance, you have your phone with you, but you don't want it to ring while you're at work. You could turn on Do Not Disturb, and it'll automatically send it to voicemail. And there's lots of options with this, then. You could kind of pick and choose what you want. For instance, one of the things you could do is you could have it where all calls are blocked. Only calls that are not in your contact list, calls in your favorites. And there's also there's a setting that if a person calls, you could turn this on. Person calls twice in 3 minutes, it lets the call come through. So like if there's a real emergency, someone can get to you like that. You go to settings and you turn that on in the notification area. And so speaking of settings, a lot of things have changed in settings to make it easier to find. Like one example of that is Bluetooth. Settings, general, Bluetooth, yada, yada, yada. It's actually just, you go to settings, it's like the second and third item down now, Bluetooth, yeah. Other things, too, is that just like there was Twitter integration in iOS 5, there's now Facebook integration. That's all there now. That works basically the same way as Twitter integration. You could post to Twitter, Facebook. You could share stuff, you know, from any application almost. Most of the stuff we're talking about goes to be done with Siri. There's a lot of updates to Siri. They added a lot of stuff like sports scores and menu selections and reserve tables at restaurants and stuff like that. If you hold down Siri and ask what could I help you or what could I say, you could launch apps with Siri, say launch mail and stuff like that. That's all pretty cool about that. In the mail app, there's a section in mail and it actually shows up as a new inbox called VIP. What that is that you could pick people from your contacts list. Anytime they send you an email, it will show up in this box that's called VIP. It doesn't move the mail out of your regular inbox. It actually just filters it so it'll show up in the VIP mailbox. So, for instance, if you're like waiting for an email from Bob Jones and you get 20 emails a minute, you know, you get high traffic, you could put him, if he's in your contacts, into the VIP and you just keep watching your VIP box and it'll filter that out. Yeah. Other thing, too, in mail, and this also works in messages and a few other places, if you're using VoiceOver, if you actually swipe down while you're on either like an email or say like a text message, there's a new rotor command and actually will allow you to delete that message right from there. Everyone remembers having to click edit and pick each message one by one and click delete. Well, now you just swipe to the one you want, flick down, it'll say delete, you can delete right from there. So that makes things a lot easier, a lot faster. Okay, there's also something called Passbook. It's an app on the phone that will actually allow you to store cards and, say, membership ID for information for stuff that you kind of like would commonly use. But the key to this is that the vendor has to be part of the program. You want to store an airline boarding passes or a frequent flyer card. That airline has to be part of the program. And I think right now, Amy, you tell me about 30 or so different companies or so. Yeah.
I
was kind of disappointed. Yeah.
My apps, I've got about 10 that actually have them.
And you can also use it to pay for these items in some cases, too. Yeah, I think, like, movie tickets, like with Fandango,
stuff like, Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks, yeah.
You can use it, like, a couple of my airline apps come up. So I was able to use it to go right to my boarding pass.
So to pay for something, you must have to set up something else to authorize that.
Some of them could do right through your Apple account.
Oh, like your Starbucks, you set up your credit card to go along with it.
Yeah.
A couple other things in accessibility is some new stuff in there that's kind of useful. Most of the accessibility features will now work with VoiceOver. I mean, some of them didn't work before. Like Assistive Touch, that never really worked with VoiceOver well. That works now. Zoom, even though it's been in for a while, Zoom now will work with VoiceOver. If you turn on Zoom with VoiceOver, the command in Zoom to actually activate Zoom and start the magnification is a three-finger double tap, which, as we all know, what does that do with VoiceOver? It would actually shut off the speech.
Shut off the speech, right.
Not off VoiceOver. Okay.
Right.
Now, and if you have Zoom and VoiceOver running at the same time, do a three-finger double tap, Zoom wins over. Zoom wins that fight. It will actually start zooming in on stuff. And what's interesting, when Zoom is activated, the voice on and off that used to be a three-finger double tap becomes a three-finger triple tap, which used to be
screen curtain.
Yep. And the reason that it does that is because you have Zoom on, you don't need a screen curtain, presumably. So it's pretty cool how they actually made it work well. Yeah. The other thing, too, in accessibility, there's a couple of things. There's one where you could change the speed of the triple-click home. I think it's only three choices, like slow, medium, fast, something like that, but you could modify that too. I know some people have trouble hitting that fast. The other thing too is there's something now called guided access. What this does is it restricts a program, an app that's running. So say you turn on guided access and then you run an app. Say you have an app for your kids, but you don't want them messing around the rest of the phone. So you launch that app for them. Then you turn on guided access. You could lock them in that app. until you actually turn it off yourself. And you can set a password so they, you know, can't do that. So that may be good in, like, yeah, for kiosk type of situations or demos in public, yeah.
Or if you're training somebody.
Training situations, yeah.
Another good thing I think they did used to be, that when you updated software, you updated your apps, you had to put in your password every time. You no longer have to do that.
Yeah, you still do that for a new purchase, but...
New purchase, but not for updates. If you want to update, you just hit the update button or update all button.
Although there's one potential flip side for this. If you're a voiceover user and you share your phone with other people or your iOS device with other people, the times you may not want to update an app until you know for sure that the update is going to work, this kind of can circumvent that a little bit. So
But as I say, if you want to update an app, you don't have to put in your password. Another thing is...
The app store's changed quite a lot, yeah.
Okay. The app store's changed.
App store. When you search for an app, so that you put in a search term, it used to show a list of results. What it does now, it puts each result in a separate page. Again, good and bad. Good because it makes it very clear what that top result is, because nothing else is on the page. Bad because it kind of directs your attention to that first search result. You don't always necessarily think to turn the page and go to the next app. In fact, there's a little bit of controversy about this when it was in beta. Some people were actually claiming that they couldn't get it to work right at all. But it does work now. It does fix, but it's a little bit different in that situation. Also, when you install apps, it used to be as soon as you start installing an app, you get bounced out of the App Store back to your home screen and you'd watch the app install. You actually still stay in the App Store now, so you could actually either keep looking for more apps or do other things in that. And then once the app is installed, it'll say there's a button that says open the app. On-screen keyboard, if anybody used the touch typing method of typing with VoiceOver, used to be with the modify keys, the shift, the delete, and the more numbers / symbols, you'd have to actually split tap those to get those to work. Now what you do is you just hold your finger on them and lift off, and it'll activate that. So it's sort of like typing a letter. This is actually, like I said, there's a lot of stuff you really don't realize how much better it is until you actually start using it. That is a lot better if you use your phone like I do with one hand. It's a lot easier doing that, yeah.
That's not a phone thing, though. Is that the phone or the operating system?
That's a change in VoiceOver in the operating system, okay. But that would be brought down to all other models as well, yeah. So there are some of these things that will not work on certain devices. Like, for instance, David, you were using the Maps app with audible directions, right?
I was trying to. 4S.
Yeah, I do not think that works with 4S and 3GSs for actually live audible directions. Yeah, that
works with 4S, but not with anything 4, below that.
Yeah. So, if I find a reference to what features match what model, I'll send it on the support.
There's another thing, too. Now you're able to go in and you can turn, there's an like everybody else, Apple collects information, and there's an advertising section that you can turn. You actually put it so it's to on instead of off certain kind of data.
Apple made some changes in their policy, and they actually kind of put a moratorium on apps that did not collect data in a very specific manner. The way it is now is that they can't just collect data without notifying the operating system itself that they're doing it. So, and the reason that's significant is exactly what Amy was just saying, that there is a privacy setting that, and I think it maybe, is it? It's off by default, right? I think mine was off.
I don't remember.
You have to turn on the privacy setting?
No, I think it was the other way around. The wording is that it's like allow collection of data. I think mine was turned off. I think it was set to the most private setting in mind, if I remember.
My 4S had to turn it off.
I had to turn it off.
Okay, because there's only one pathway for them to collect the information now. That one setting can affect all of that. You could totally, flip the switch, turn it off. Apps that were kind of pulling information and that they weren't too clear about in there, I guess terms of service, what they were taking out. David Woodbridge of Vision Australia. On his blog, he's got some great audio tutorials about everything we've been talking about.
Have you used the LTE?
I have.
And do you find it significantly faster?
My mantra used to be always that if you're only using data on a device, your connection speed really doesn't matter. I do use my phone as a modem for work, so I do use data off the device, but I used to think that if you're just reading emails and reading web pages, it doesn't really matter if you're a 2G, a 3G connection, or a 4G. Now that I have LTE, I take it all back. The first time I opened a web page, honestly, the page was just there as soon as I clicked the link. And I found that it actually does vary a lot where you are, 13 megabits to 26, and some people I've heard reporting 50 megabits, which I haven't seen that yet. I don't know.
Which company are you with?
This one's on AT&T. Yeah.
And do you know, are these phones available now? I know there was a big back order of them in the beginning. Do we know, or can you just go into an Apple store or an AT&T store?
I've been told off the cuff that they get shipments on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's first come, first serve. Get it early enough, you'll get one.
Yeah.
You don't.
Is there any noticeable difference on battery life between the new phone and the 4S? Or is it pretty much the same?
With the 4S. It's hard for me to make a comparison because I've never used the 4S myself, you know, for an extended period of time. Although, between that and my 4, it's probably almost twice as long as battery life.
I noticed, and people have had made variable reports about this, but my 4S, I get a lot longer battery life. Even with the new software. It used to be that if I, and the
over
reason...
Over the 5?
No, not over the 5, but like, just, I'm saying, just the iOS 6.
Oh.
Just installing iOS 6, mm-hmm. My battery life is much... It used to be that if I... Say I ran the radio, say I had like a radio station on or a podcast on or whatever, for 5 or 6 hours, that would eat up my battery. Now, because I work overnights, I work a 10-hour shift, I can have that thing on for 10 hours and my battery's still going.
You're saying this because it's iOS 6?
It's because it's iOS 6, because I don't have the 5.
Even on my old 4, you know, backup phone, it actually has helped battery life on that as well. And that one's kind of beat. Yeah, so I agree with that statement.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, you know, Tim, you were talking about, you know, update Windows updates. I actually had the same situation. I had to update a Windows XP computer that was brand new formatted SP2, no updates. And the only thing I had available to me, because there was no drivers installed yet, was to do it all via my iPhone. Even after doing all that SP3 and all that, I was still about 90% battery life left. And that used to, you know, that used to take down the battery like anything, you know, that type of thing.
One other thing there's now with iOS 6 is when you're in the list of email and text messages and a few other things, if you set the rotor in the right way, you can swipe vertically and double tap to delete without having to go into the edit mode, which is
right.
Nice.
It's something in the rotor called Actions. And
Actions.
First swipe down, you usually delete, and the next one is the default action, which is to open it. I've actually noticed that it actually sets that setting automatically sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
If your rotor isn't set to that, it'll even do that for you.
Can you put iOS 6 on the 3GS safely?
It will work, yeah.
It will work. What I've heard is that you don't get nearly the performance.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people having sluggishness with the 3GS. I think it'll work, but it doesn't have enough power to actually take advantage of some of the new iOS 6 stuff.
Yeah, but that's the oldest device that is supported by iOS 6, so it'll have the smallest feature set available to it. Yeah.
People go to appleviz.com. There are just tons of podcasts on all, like a lot of the new features, the VIP mailbox, the Do Not Disturb. I use Do Not Disturb a lot now. And what I do, like, I have my favorites list, which includes only a very few people, and those are the only people who can call me. And I've actually tested it, and it works really well. Well, I heard on a podcast that you can create another kind of group list to do the same thing other than your favorites, but I haven't figured out a way to do that.
Yeah, you could, if you don't go into contacts, you could do a contact group somehow. I've heard that as well. Yeah.
I know, but I don't know how to do
that. Yeah, I haven't tried it.
Figure that out.
Actually, I just heard that like last night.
Yeah.
Speaking of podcasts, there's a lot of stuff. AppleViz is a great resource. Dr. Robert Carter, who's actually a Vibe member, isn't he?
Yep.
He's got a couple of good podcasts about that. Of course, my favorite, David Woodbridge in Australia. Now, there was also a question.
The text also, with the favorites, also work for text messages in Do Not Disturb mode, or just calls?
I don't know. I've only used it with calls.
It's a good question. I haven't tried that myself. I haven't tried texting myself. Yet.
Yeah, no, I've only done it with calls.
This is Jen. I've installed my iOS 6, and I'm really happy with it. I use a Bluetooth keyboard a mm-hmm. lot with my iPhone, and I wonder if there are any improvements within Bluetooth. And
yes, there are. Well, first of all, the one thing I mentioned about Bluetooth being easier to get to, the other thing, if you're using a Bluetooth QWERTY keyboard, one thing you couldn't do was double tap and hold it before.
Right.
You could actually do that now.
Oh, neat.
try VoiceOver Shift M, I believe, is the command to do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have not figured out a way of doing that with a Braille keyboard, though.
No.
You know, it may be very deep. And unfortunately, my one pet peeve I mentioned to Amy before, and it's still there, and I think, I don't know who to blame, whether that's Apple or the Braille display manufacturers, with a QWERTY keyboard, like the one, Mika, you have there and the one I have here, with the keyboard. You don't have to press the power button.
Right.
I have not figured out how to do that with a Braille keyboard. Display. Yeah. And I've tried several different ones. None of them seem to do that.
Are there Braille display differences too? I haven't tried one with my iPhone yet.
I haven't found any Braille display differences other than that there was a problem with some Braille displays, particularly ones from HIMS, that wouldn't work.
It now works now, right?
And all that stuff is...
Yep.
So there's really no additional features. There's just some bug fixes about that. Yeah. Okay, there was another question also by David about... most of you probably heard the term jailbreaking. You could actually install software outside of Apple's normal channel. You could install software from other sources. It's basically, you're gaining access to parts of the operating system you normally wouldn't.
It voids your warranty, basically, with Apple, doesn't it?
No, it does not. That is a commonly held conception, but it does not. They will not support the software if you're jailbroken. Your hardware still has its warranty. Now, if you want to un-jailbreak yourself just by resetting back to factory settings, then they will support it. So you don't technically void your warranty by doing that. And there's no copyright issues about this either. But.
What kind of stuff would you want to install? What kind of stuff runs on Apple, runs on the phone, outside from the stuff that Apple...
A lot of these features that we see come up in all these new iOS versions, these were things that jailbreak developers created months ago or years ago in different versions, previous versions. Like the Do Not Disturb thing was a very popular jailbreak app. And then Apple sees this stuff and says, maybe we should put this in the operating system to begin with. Yeah. And the way it came up with David, who was talking about Nina's phone, hers is a jailbreaking phone because she has some security settings in that they're not necessarily available right now in iOS. But maybe if enough people download that jailbreak app, maybe the next version of iOS, that'll be a part of it. That'll be an option. If you look at some of those jailbreak apps, they're actually Apple developers, even working for Apple themselves, that do this on the sideline. This is what we could do if we had... if we had control of the operating system.
When you update to iOS 6, you can do it through iTunes, but you don't have to.
Yeah, ever since iOS 5, there's been what they call over-the-air updates.
Right.
You don't have to hook your phone into any computer, iTunes, anything like that. Just go into Settings, Update, and it'll bring the update down right from the internet, from the download. Actually, that's how I did my iPhone 4.
Yeah.
I didn't mind, but I probably can hit the logo a couple of times before it was successful.
It depends.
When iOS came out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why.
They overloaded servers, yeah. Yeah, I gave like 72 hours, and I had no problem. Yeah,
Yeah, one thing, when I downloaded, I thought something was busted because it seemed... I think it took me a grand total of 3 hours.
It depends on when you did it. First, I did 4 phones, and the first one I did took me 22 minutes. The next one I did took me an hour and a half. It just depended upon when you did it. The last one I did, it took me 18 minutes because I did it about a week and a half after everybody else had done it.
Another little thing, too, you could do FaceTime now over 3G. You don't have to do Wi-Fi. That's another thing that's popping into my head. Yeah. All in all, there's probably about 200 different changes, and most of them are kind of insignificant, but it's definitely evolutionary rather than revolutionary.
Well, thank you very, very much.